Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, and welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here, of course, with Colleen Pilar. And this week, we're going to discuss what to do if you find it hard to connect with your dog. We got an interesting email. Colleen's going to go into that, from a family whose dog is connecting with some members, maybe, and not others, maybe. So let's hear it.
Yeah, here's the email we got. I'm a dog lover. I grew up with dogs, and I was finally able to convince my husband to let us bring home a dog. We looked into a couple and decided to meet two. He fell in love with the first pup we met. And although I wasn't feeling the sparks, I decided to go along with it because after all the work I'd done to convince him, I was happy to see him connect. He's been a part of our home for 7 months now, and I cannot seem to connect with him. My husband is gone all day, and I am home with the dog and our three littles. I heard your podcast about getting a dog for the kids and how the mother is usually the one taking care of the dog. So true. I guess my question is, if I already have committed to this dog, even though I realize now that he and I don't easily click, how do I make the connection? Giving up on him is not in my cards. I feel I have committed, and he is my responsibility. But I do feel like I've become more and more resentful because I cannot connect with him. I would love ideas on how to create a relationship with a dog that doesn't naturally connect with the caregiver. Thanks in advance. So that's a great question, and it's a question that a lot of families really struggle with and deal with, of how do I connect with a dog who may be a little bit less social? So we always want to start by gathering information right at the beginning and asking questions. What kind of questions pop into your head?
Sure. Some of the questions that I would want to ask her, first of all, is what's the breed of the dog? Because that may make a difference on how social this dog is, because some breeds are much more aloof than others. Mm-hmm. I would want to know the age of the dog. I'd like to know a little bit more about how they got the dog. Did they get him as a puppy? Did they get him as an adult? Where did they get the dog from? So those questions can all lead into some answers as to what's going on with this dog. I would also like to know the age of her kids, because the age of her kids may make a big difference in how much she can actually interact effectively with the dog. Right. And then I'd also like to know, what does the dog like to do with other members of the family? And those would be a place, those are some of the questions I would like to start with. How about you?
I think those are great starting questions. They're definitely ones I would ask too. I would also ask things like, you know, what are the things you've tried to bond with this puppy? What are the things that this puppy really enjoys doing? And what do the other members of your family enjoy doing with the puppy? Because it could be, you know, that your husband plays fetch with him in the backyard and the puppy loves that, but that's just not your game. But we might be able to use that, you know, that kind of thing. And then a question that I would also like to check is, you know, how is your dog with guests?
Right.
You know, people who are not part of the family. Because that sometimes gives me a little bit of an idea of how social the dog is in terms of – the question is the dog going to work to establish a relationship with you or not? And that's the piece we're looking at on the sociability scale. And the dog is already in your home. So – we just need to know how much of the work is on your end versus how much is on the dog's end. And a lot of dogs are super social, and they meet us more than halfway. But many dogs aren't.
Right.
So regardless of the answers to all of these questions, some of my basic advice is going to be the same. I'm still extremely interested in the answers to the questions, and I would tweak my advice based on that. But my very first thing I would say is, what can we do to make special interactions between you and this dog? And I would start with amazing treats that only you have access to, mm-hmm. and some one-on-one relationship pieces so that we would hand feed the dog, but we would also just regular meals. Here's your kibble.
Right.
But we'd also have treats that are above and beyond what anyone else mm-hmm. in the family has access
mm-hmm.
to.
Right. I would agree with that, too, because you want the dog to think that that person is particularly special. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found remarkably lacking in this statement from her are any problems that the dog is causing. You know, she's not saying we've had him for 7 months. She doesn't mention any house training problems, any chewing problems, any biting problems, any difficulty with the children. So I'm wondering, if this is a young dog, why are there no problems?
Well, the other interesting thing in this question, And she described it perfectly with her words, but the one thing that I noticed is she never uses his name.
Correct.
And I do notice when clients email me and say, the dog, the dog, the dog, we typically have a relationship that doesn't have a good connection. That normally, if I get, you know, this is an 8-sentence email or maybe more, and in that time, it doesn't become easier to say, and Edzo does this, or I haven't connected with Edzo. That's indicative to me of the fractured relationship. So the good news is she's not describing that he's making her crazy
right. By
jumping on the children and taking food off the counter and just generally making life a nightmare with these little kids. But she's not connecting and she's not feeling it. And she describes herself as a dog lover.
Right.
So this is a person who knows the value of a relationship with a dog. So so that said, that's sad, you know?
It is sad.
This is where we are, and how can we fix it? Well, I don't know. That depends on some of those answers, but we can definitely make it better.
Right.
You know, and it may not get you to the spot you want to be, but we can make it better than it currently is.
Right. I was going to say, one of the reasons why I had noticed that there wasn't any behavior problems with the kids, to me, is that another indication that this is a non-social dog? If you're not, if you've adopted a young dog and he's been thrown into a family with little kids, and maybe he doesn't get all the attention or exercise he needs, you would think there might be a few behavior problems, like, gosh, he chewed a chair, or he chewed my slipper because he was really bored. But since I'm not hearing any of that, maybe that is such a non-issue for her because the relationship is the primary issue. That also makes me wonder, how detached is this dog from the family in general? And
yes.
And if that's the case, that's a much harder situation to remedy. Mm-hmm. At least I find it, if the dog, for whatever reason, doesn't attach, if it's a very loose dog, that's much harder to make it work. But I agree. I would certainly have her do a very special treat that's hers. I would also, too, have her come up with an activity that she wants to do with a dog. What is something that you envision when you were going to get a dog? What is it that you really wanted to do with this dog? And is there a way in which we can get you to do that effectively with this dog? Is a way of something that you envision that you love doing with dogs? So let's do it with this dog and see if we can make that work. It might be that she just would really love to be able to take the dog for a walk. Well, maybe one of the things is when her husband gets home in the evening, maybe that would be her chance to take the dog, even for, you know, a 15-minute, 20-minute walk, that she can get a break from the kids, get a break from the house, and really enjoy her dog and take a special treat with it. And the dog might really enjoy that too, that chance to get away from that busy household.
Yes.
So that would be another thing. I like the idea of hand feeding. I also would do, you know, you could make hand feeding a game. It doesn't have to just be sitting there go 1, 2, 3. You can show her a kibble and toss it. He go gets it and you click and then he comes running back and he gets another one and you toss it another direction. So it can be a game that you're playing while you're also feeding him. So I think there are a lot of things.
That reinforces the dog over and over and over again for turning back toward you.
Right.
Which, you know, then it's this connection of, ooh, look at her. And then good things happen. Look at her. Good things
happen.
That's changing the dog's emotional state.
Right.
So it's such a simple, silly game. It sounds like nothing, but the throw a treat and then click the dog for turning back towards you for the next one. Yay.
Right.
That's a fun game.
It is a really fun game. And I also find too, it's a great game for starting to instill cum in a dog. Mm-hmm. So not only are you instilling the dog looking and turning towards you and making a connection to you, but you're teaching the dog that cum is really fun because every time I go charging back to you, there's a treat, and then we throw out for another one, and that's really fun. So the dog also learns to stay connected to you even when he's not physically connected to you. There's this mental connection, and that's what we're really trying to build here, is this heart-to-heart or this connection between the dog. So let's do it where we actually do an activity that makes the dog connect to you.
Yes. And tricks can be fun for that too.
Yes.
So just some simple trick training, any of that. But a real valuable thing, if she can find the time and make it work, would be to sign herself and the dog up for a group class.
Yes.
You know, if when her husband comes home, he can watch the kids for a while, one night a week, and she takes the dog off for an hour to a group class, because that increases communication.
Absolutely.
I mean, it just changes your ability to communicate with your dog when you put yourself in a distracting environment and then say it's you and me here against the environment. Like, what can we do, and how focused can we be, and how much teamwork can we have? So you think that could be a very valuable thing for her too, if she can make it work, which a lot of parents with young kids can't. I mean,
right.
I get that. So that's when we would say the games at home and the trick training and all of that. But if it's possible, and if we are looking at that this is a big problem, this is a valuable use of your time.
Right. That's the other thing. I try to be very sensitive to people's schedules and people's family time and that kind of thing. But at some point, you have to decide what's really important. If you realize this dog's going to be with you for 10 years, a mm-hmm. 6-week, 1-hour-a-week commitment to make 10 years work, you have to put that in perspective and say, this, somehow we need to make this work. Maybe it's my mom comes over and helps my husband with dinner and the kids so that, you know, one night a week, or we hire a babysitter or something. But at some point, you have to decide, how committed am I to mm-hmm. overcoming this problem? Because if you don't overcome it, she's already said it. She's beginning to resent him. And I can understand that. I feel like, gosh, I'm giving you everything. I've given you a home. I'm giving you food. I'm caring for you. And there's nothing. And that's just
very really draining.
Very draining. Very draining. It's kind of hard for us to make specific suggestions. And I don't necessarily want to make too specific, because I don't want people to think, gosh, this doesn't apply to me.
Right. And we haven't spoken to this person.
Correct.
And so we're not really addressing her issue other than the interesting aspects of it.
Right.
I have sent her an email, and that she and I can discuss this privately if she would like to, and we can go into more detail there. But we're looking at what are the pieces that are applicable to, in general, most people. And we can go from there. And the real pieces are looking for things that you enjoy, looking for things that your dog enjoy, and trying to find the little Venn diagram overlap.
Right.
And seeing what pieces we can build on. You know, where is the area that we can make progress? And it doesn't have to be anything major. I mean, it really truly can be just little tiny quick games.
Right, because it's kind of like the little boy who has his finger stuck in the dike. You just need to figure out what is it that's going to break this relationship open. Because you mm-hmm. obviously have some kind of a relationship. It's just not the relationship you want. So what is the key that's going to unlock it? Or what are the few things that are going to sort of have a shift here so that once it's unlocked, it can continue to grow? I think one of the things that's important to understand, though, that for some people, that it could be it's just the dog. And it is the dog way the dog is and who he is. And while you can make it better, you may never have that close kind of bonding relationship simply because the dog that you chose to take into your home may have some issues that make it extraordinarily difficult for him to do that. If the dog had come from a hoarding situation and was never socialized to people or places or dogs when it was a puppy and in its critical socialization period, it's going to be much harder to break through to that dog. Certain breeds are a little bit more aloof. That doesn't mean that they can't be affectionate, but know that they like a certain amount of time alone. Mm-hmm. So,
puppies are not a blank slate. It's not a matter of that, you know, you adopt an 8-week puppy and then it's all what you do to the puppy, that their behavior, you know, their behavior is environmental and genetic, and the choices they make and the health of their mother and all sorts of things play a role into how social and adaptable and resilient your dog is. And so that affects how far we can move the needle on changing behavior sometimes.
Absolutely. In fact, I was just at a conference this weekend and listened to Patricia McConnell, who was talking about trauma, the diagnosis and treatment of trauma in dogs. And mm-hmm. one of the things she was saying is that, you know, you need to look at resiliency, and there's a lot of things that can affect resiliency. She was saying a traumatic event is generally something that happens out of the blue, and she gave the suggestion that we were in this big conference room. The ceiling suddenly fell into the conference room, totally unexpected, traumatic experience for many people there. Some people would be over it in a week, wouldn't bother them after that. Some people, it might take a month. Some people, 3 months. Other people, 6 months to a year with some really good therapy. And some people would never get over that traumatic experience. And that mm-hmm. trauma can be very persistent in both time and pervasive in that it begins, if you were, you know, maybe you're afraid of conference rooms, well, then pretty soon you're afraid of hotels. And then you're afraid of, you know, large buildings. So it can permeate in different directions. And the same thing can happen to dogs. And if they haven't had a particularly good beginning in life, if their mother was traumatized during birth and was having a, you know, was under a lot of stress, then these are dogs who are not going to have the same level of resiliency as those who had a happy puppyhood in utero and afterwards.
Right.
So
epigenetic changes and all of that.
Yeah. So I think it's important to recognize that, as we've talked about before, behavior does have three components. It has a learned component, a genetic component, and an environmental component. And, you know, there's just so much you can push any one of those components to make a difference in a dog's life. But it could be that you can push it enough so you can have a rewarding relationship with your dog. It may not be the one you ideally want, but that doesn't mean you can't have a rewarding relationship with your dog.
And I think like if we're just going to use our parenting analogy here for a minute, you'll have a different relationship with each kid. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have a different relationship with each dog. So this dog, you may not have the relationship you envisioned before you got the dog, but as you get to know the dog and you make the connections and find out, you know, what is the overlap between what I like to do and what you like to do, you'll develop a relationship that is unique. This
right.
particular bond. And hopefully she's going to be able to find some connections with this dog because it is a difficult thing.
It is.
But we've seen lots and lots and lots of people turn that around. And I definitely have had oodles of clients in which the dog is more bonded to one person in the family than others. And there are a lot of things we can do to tilt the favor a little bit so that we can
right.
balance things out and make a dog feel really pretty comfortable and happy with all of the members of its family.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you said that, I have a current client. It's a young couple, and they adopted a dog. And they called me in because they were having some particular problems with this dog. But one of the things that we went over with them was I talked about stress signals with them. And mm-hmm. the light went off in the young woman's head. She said to me at a later time, she said, you know, one of the best things you gave me was a better understanding of who Garnet is. And so that mm-hmm. I was beginning to resent the fact that she was doing these things and she wasn't bonding to me when I suddenly realized, holy cow, Garnet's having a hard time. So once I made things easier for Garnet, then I was able to relax into the relationship, and they have a lovely relationship now. It's not the same relationship that Garnet has with her husband, but they both have a great relationship with this dog. So I think part of it is helping the owners to understand who the dog is that they have, and that maybe this dog is not having as easy a time as you think it is. And if you just tweak the environment a little bit, or, you know, mm-hmm. give the dog a safe haven away from the three little kids, things mm-hmm. might begin to turn around as well. So there can be some environmental things that we can change, and just some recognition of who this dog actually is, and that maybe it's a lovely dog underneath there. It just needs a little bit of help.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what it comes down to, sort of knowing who each of us is and accepting that, and then doing the best with what's there and making progress.
Yes, I agree.
So I think in terms of solving the problem, have we solved the problem? I don't know. But we've hopefully given this woman and anyone else some things to think about and ideas for improving a relationship with a dog.
Well, the one thing I would also add, too, is something that we say pretty much at the end of every single episode. But that is, I mean, this woman's been trying for 7 months, and mm-hmm. things have obviously not getting better. If you feel like you've given it a really fair shake, and I think 7 months is a pretty fair shake, and you're not making improvements, call a positive reinforcement trainer. Because, you know, someone in your area that can help you figure out ways in which you can better connect with this dog. Might have some ideas of some games because they're going to know your specific situation. So certainly working with a trainer is going to be helpful in getting over this hump.
Absolutely. And it's a really good investment of time and money.
Right.
Because, again, we're looking at what we do now is affecting the next 10 years or more of our lives. So,
right.
I always tell people work really hard at the beginning so you don't have to work anymore.
Yes.
Sort of like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I do too. I tell people you are front. So it's kind of like saving for retirement. If you start your savings in your 20s, you're going to do so much better than if you try and start them in your 40s. But the other thing that could be a combination, which I've done with my clients, is what you might do is hire a trainer to come and help you to do a few things at home. And when things get a little bit easier, then you can go to a group class. Because I always like to get my dogs my private clients into group classes, because that puts it in another situation in which you can work to bond to one another. And in fact, I just had a client who did that. Their dog was really bonded to their wife. They had me out to assess the situation. And a couple weeks later, he called me and said, I'm taking your beginning class because I need to get, Ray out, and he and I need to bond together without my wife being there. So
it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's a great thing to do.
It is. So, all right. I think that may wrap it up for this time, Colleen.
And I think so. We love getting questions.
We do.
So thank you for that. You can always send us questions at feedback@yourfamilydogpodcast.com, or you can call us at 614-349-1661.
Right. Thank you. And, one other thing I just wanted to add, too, that if you have been listening to us regularly on iTunes or Sketcher or Google Play, if you like us, give us a good review, if you would, please. That would be helpful to us. And tell your friends. If you like this, maybe they will, too. So with that, I'll see you next week, Colleen.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.